poll from the Washington Post and ABC News finds that nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions in the U.S. have gotten so bad that politically motivated violence has gotten more likely. That poll was conducted after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband was attacked in their San Francisco home last week. Our next guest has studied conflict all around the world and says things don't have to be this way. In fact, she says, we know what can help dial down the tension, and we've barely even started doing it here in the U.S. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about political violence maybe tied to next week's election or in the future? Are you discouraged by the divisiveness, the polarization, the negativity in politics? What do you want to see from politicians, from the media, to start bridging some divides? And have you found ways in your own life to disagree with people, but still relate to and talk with them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda Ripley is a journalist, author, and host of the How To podcast. Her books include High Conflict, How We Get Trapped, and How We Get Out. She recently wrote about preventing political violence in the Washington Post. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me. Always good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you back. Now, I mentioned that one data point, this survey from ABC and the Washington Post, people worried more than they had been previously about political violence. Does that match up with what you're seeing, at least when it comes to perception of a painfully divided country?
Definitely. I think most Americans are exhausted by the political conflict that we're in and worried about the future and rightly worried about violence.
Now, in that recent piece I mentioned, you wrote, we have not even begun to do the most basic things you would do if you wanted to interrupt this conflict. And this part of this may come as news to people. There are ways. There are strategies. What kind of starting points can we have to try to bridge these gaps that we're not doing right now?
Well, one thing I learned in following people and communities, even countries who have reduced political violence and shifted out of really toxic, dysfunctional conflict, is that any intuitive thing you do is not going to work. So you really have to do counterintuitive things. And so we luckily know a lot about what those things are. And the U.S. government has pushed politicians in many other countries that have been in far worse conflicts to do some basic things that we know dial down the heat a little bit and reduce the odds of political violence. Like, for example, all over the world, the U.S. government has pushed politicians to sign what are sometimes called codes of conduct or non-aggression pacts. And gang violence interrupters do this every day in America. So it's a way to say, hey, we've gotten to a place where there are no rules of engagement anymore. Anything goes. And it's really dangerous because when people feel really threatened, when political leaders keep giving them reasons to feel really threatened, they are much more likely to resort to violence, including people who are, you know, mentally unstable or in pain for other reasons. But that language really matters. And so one of the things that you would do is to say, hey, get a bunch of influential politicians from all sides into a room. What are some things that we would like to change about how we're treating each other? Maybe it's to not dehumanize your opponent on social media by saying they're evil or hate America, right? Or maybe it's to vow to accept the results of an election after reasonable due process. Almost always you commit to condemning acts of violence, especially when they're perpetrated against the other side. So these are just basic things that we ask other countries to do, even when they're emerging from civil war. And so that would be one thing we would want to ask our own politicians to do.
We're talking to Amanda Ripley, author of the book High Conflict, about techniques, proven ways in many countries around the world to dial down political conflict, how they could apply here in the U.S. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Amanda, people might hear the idea of, okay, let's get Democrats and Republicans, say, to sit down and come together on these ground rules. And it sounds maybe a little naive and something you can't imagine politicians doing. But You reference this ad here from the candidates for governor in Utah 2 years ago. We've got a Republican and a Democrat here. I want to give a listen.
We are both equally dedicated to the American values of democracy, liberty, and justice for all people.
We just have different opinions on how to achieve those ideals.
But today, we are setting aside those differences to deliver a message that is critical for the health of our nation.
That whether you vote by mail or in person, we will fully support the results of the upcoming presidential election, regardless of the outcome.
Although we sit on different sides of the aisle, we are both committed to American civility and a peaceful transition of power.
I mean, that's pretty cool, but it's really unique. I don't see a lot of other stuff like this. Do we need more of this kind of thing?
Yeah, and, you know, that ad ended up going viral and gave both candidates an unexpected boost. And then, we do know there's a yearning for it among voters, even though we think there's not, there is. And researchers recently tested the ad and found, in a huge sample of 32,000 people, and found that it reduced significantly reduced support for partisan violence. So anyway, we need more of these to answer your question, Rob. And, you know, to this question of, well, isn't this naive? Why, how could you ever get some of these political leaders, especially the most influential ones, to the table? I had the same objection, right? It seems just Pollyanna. And so I brought that same question. This is the only thing I know how to do, is to ask other people who know more than I do. And so I brought it to Curtis Toler, who does gang violence interruption in Chicago. And I brought it to Neilan Parker, who works for Search for Common Ground USA and has worked in conflict zones all over the world. And they both said, Amanda, it always feels impossible. But here's the thing. All these people, even the ones who are really benefiting from the conflict, you know, they're raising money off of it, they're getting power and attention, votes, right? Even those people, most of them, not all, but most of them do not want to get hurt or for their family to get hurt. And that's the argument. That's the sales pitch you use with gang leaders, with guerrilla members in other countries in civil war. It's the same argument, because no one wants to die, right? And most people, what Curtis has found in gang violence interruption, most people would like to get out of the conflict, or at least have it change and be less toxic. But no one has asked them. No one has invited them. So you have to be smart about it. You have to be strategic about how you do this. But the idea that none of these people will come to the table just isn't supported by history or the evidence.
Now, I want to spend most of our time on things that do work. But you mentioned earlier that in a conflict situation, a high conflict situation in particular, there might be intuitive things that seem obvious, and you said a lot of those don't work. Can you give us an example of something that, you know, on the gut level sounds like the way to resolve this conflict that doesn't?
Right. Well, you know, vowing to destroy the other side in the next election would be one example, right? Or to impeach the president, right? Like, these are all worthwhile endeavors, and it's important to hold people accountable, but it doesn't tend to interrupt high conflict, because high conflict operates really differently from normal conflict. It's the kind of thing where people are so dug in that they make a lot of mistakes. And so everything feels like a threat, including things that aren't threatening. So, you know, in a smaller conflict, it might be, you know, if I can just argue the facts with my relative who disagrees with me, if I can just, you know, crush them with statistics and controlled research studies, that they will change their mind. Again, doesn't work. That just is not how people, unfortunately, not how people work, especially in this kind of conflict, where it's much more emotional. It's much more about belonging, about humiliation, about a fear of our kids not belonging in the future. So if we're not speaking to those things, then it's not going to work.
We're talking to journalist Amanda Ripley, author of the book High Conflict, looking at the fear of violence in an election year, and more generally, the political divide, the increasingly conflictual political divide, it feels like, in the United States, how to keep in perspective and start improving our political rhetoric and the way we talk to and about each other. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this, that ad you just heard? Would you want to see Tony Evers and Tim Michaels do an ad like that? Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson? Do you want to see less divisive language from politicians across the board? Are you worried about these conflicts? Have you found ways to bridge gaps, maybe in your own household, your own family, your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with journalist and author Amanda Ripley about political divisions in this election year, the threat of political violence, and the tools that are out there that can help us move out of deeply rooted conflicts, things that have worked after civil wars around the world, dealing with gang violence, and that could maybe help the American political system. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Edward is with us in Milwaukee. Edward, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The first observation I've got is, you know, to compare political opponents to gangs is, you know, it does seem outrageous, and yet I think your guest has great ideas. It just seems to me that nobody is held to account, to be accountable for what they do anymore, and it's really frustrating for me as a you know, as an American citizen. And I would love to be part of a movement that would achieve this. And thank you, guest, for coming on.
Edward, thanks for that call. Let's start with that last thing he said first, Amanda. He would love to become part of a movement to achieve some of the things you are talking about. Is there such a movement? How could somebody like Edward get involved?
You know, I think that movement is underway, and it gives me heart. It gives me strength to hear Edward say that. I think it's going to take a bunch of different forms. It's not going to be one unified, you know, website we can all sign onto, but some of the ones that I feel like are doing some creative work in this space would be Starts With Us, which is an organization that is trying to kickstart that movement. Also, Braver Angels has done a lot of work in helping us rehumanize each other and understand each other, even as we continue to disagree. And there are lots of others, but you're not alone. I can tell you that much, Edward, for sure.
Thanks for the call, Edward. Edward also talks about a lack of consequences as he sees it, where, and I think we've seen some of this, okay, this norm gets violated, and we look around, and it doesn't seem to be a big consequence of it, so maybe it gets pushed a little further and a little further. How do we stop that? Who holds someone accountable if someone on one side is doing that sort of thing?
Yeah, there's sometimes a game that a trap I fall into in my own head. I don't know if this is familiar to your listeners, but where something really insane will happen, and I'll think automatically in my head, I'll think, oh, this will be the thing. This will be the thing that convinces everybody that this has gone too far, right? Or that this person needs to be held accountable. And then I've learned enough about this kind of conflict to understand that, unfortunately, that's pretty much never true. That that's just not the way humans behave in an us versus them malignant conflict like that, because we get so dug in and so threatened by the other side that we will rationalize and justify almost anything, mostly out of fear of the alternative, you know? So that doesn't mean that people can't be reached. I mean, most Americans are not on the extremes of this particular conflict, but it does mean that the conflict doesn't operate according to the ways healthy conflict operates, where people do get held accountable by voters, if nothing else.
Let's go to Samuel now in Neenah. Samuel, hi.
Hi, you hear me?
Loud and clear, Samuel. Go ahead.
Great. So my question is to the host, to the guest rather, is what are the situations and scenarios socially that we might find ourselves in where we might talk to somebody from the other side in that situation where they're open to hearing ideas that they don't necessarily agree with, that the conversation doesn't devolve into hostility immediately, or the conversation is avoided completely because the scenario is not right? Like, what are those situations when it's okay to talk about this and it actually maybe useful if it's approached the right way?
Samuel, that's a fantastic question. And Amanda, I'll say at listener events, I've heard versions of that question from other people, even talking about, you know, their own family members and things like that. What advice do you have about having those kind of conversations?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of advice out there, and I find it mostly kind of unhelpful because it feels really pat and kind of one-dimensional. And in fact, this is really hard, and it requires practice and care and a very different mindset. So I'm really excited because recently I was able to do a podcast. I host this podcast called How To, and we were able to actually coach two adult siblings who wanted to change how they debate politics with their father, coach them with an expert who does this from Braver Angels, the organization I just mentioned. Her name is Monica Guzman. And then with their dad's permission, they recorded the long conversation they then had, which you usually don't get to hear. So my bottom line is, to understand this, to do it better, we need to see and hear more examples of it over and over and over. Because part of how we've gotten into this mess is by seeing and hearing examples of the opposite, right? Often led by, you know, cable TV news or national politicians. So for me, it's really, really helpful to hear examples of what this looks like. And a lot of it is giving up on agreeing and getting really, really interested in understanding. Because most people, they need to feel heard before they will listen. And there are some really good tips and tricks for making that happen. So it's an excellent question that I think most people are really struggling with. And we need to get more skilled about how we argue about politics and, you know, everything else.
If you want to hear an example of that, we're going to get a link to the How To podcast at WPR.org/Central Time. That'll be in the segment note for this conversation with Amanda Ripley, author of the book High Conflict, looking at ways to dial down political tensions here in the United States. How can we find situations to have more conversations like this, Amanda? As you mentioned, it's not that easy if two people from one side just get together and talk without any kind of guidance. There's a good chance it's not going to go well.
Right. So I definitely don't recommend just plunging in. You know, I think that's not a good idea. And again, gets back to that big takeaway, which is like any intuitive thing you do in high conflict to get out of the conflict will almost certainly make it worse. So what does that mean? Well, Braver Angels has a bunch of resources for this and actual workshops and debates that you can go to practice these skills. There's also something called Living Room Conversations. Livingroomconversations.org is the address. And they have a bunch of guides for actually, you know, intentionally, purposefully creating gatherings, either virtually or in person, with conversation guides and some like guardrails in place so that those conversations will go better. So those are two places to look into.
I want to ask you about, and we've talked about this in the past, in any conflict, there are often people who perceive, hey, I benefit from this conflict, or I benefit, or my side benefits from this conflict escalating. Conflict entrepreneurs, you call them. How do we try to remove their power in these conflicts?
You know, I think conflict entrepreneurs, I mean, first of all, we can all be conflict entrepreneurs, especially in a climate like this, especially when we've developed a bunch of social media platforms to incentivize conflict entrepreneurs. But yeah, I mean, people who inflame and sort of incite conflict for their own ends, whether it's profit or, you know, just as often it's for attention or a sense of belonging or being important. All those things are really, really powerful right now. So it's something we can all have to sort of be careful about. The first thing is to notice who are the conflict entrepreneurs in your orbit, whether it's in your social media feed or in your news feed most often, and maybe consider literally turning down the volume, like distancing yourself, because people who make a career out of, you know, really exploiting conflict tend to have a lot of damage in their own past that they either haven't been able or willing to deal with yet. And hopefully they will one day, but typically they tend to just spread that pain around over time. So, you know, just for your own peace of mind, it's important to recognize who conflict entrepreneurs are at any given time. Try not to be one, and then try to distance yourself from them. And I think we in the news media have to get much better at turning down the volume on conflict entrepreneurs, of recognizing that continuing to amplify this isn't helping in the way we think it will You know, we think, oh, if we could just draw attention to these outrageous things that people are saying, they will stop. And to Edward's point, your caller earlier, that's not how this works.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Amanda, things might look a little dark now. Do you feel, and I think I ask you this every time, do you feel some optimism at this point?
And what do I say every time? Every time I say yes. And I think, look, I don't, you know, optimism might be strong. I do feel hope. Sometimes things do have to get worse before they get better. I suspect that is true here, unfortunately, just people being people. And because we've not tried many of these things, I do feel some, ironically, some hope. Because if we just did a bunch of basic things, this would get better. And so that gives me hope.
Amanda, we'll leave it there. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
That's Amanda Ripley, journalist and author. Her books include High Conflict, How We Get Trapped and How We Get Out. We talked to her about dialing down political tensions as next week's election approaches and what to do about it. You can find her recent article on that link to WPR.org/Central Time, plus her how-to podcast with an example of a guided conversation between two people who disagree with each other that doesn't, I guess, I haven't listened myself, doesn't end in tears and bitterness.